Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Friday, July 29th, 2016. With me today, John Martellaro. How are you, John?
I am very good. Nice to be here.
And it's great to have you here. And Brian Chaffin, how are you?
I'm good, man. Thanks for having us.
Awesome. I'm glad both of you are here. And I have a couple topics that I think are going to be interesting, or at least they will be interesting to me because I get to hear you guys talk about them. And the first is...
Which is always rather humorous.
Well, quite oftentimes it is. Yeah. Okay, so the first thing that that I wanted to talk about today is this news that came from Bloomberg that Apple hired Dan Dodge, who was the founder of QNX and the CEO of the company as well. And this is a company that BlackBerry bought in 2010, and they've done like embedded systems and software development, and now the guy that made that company is working for Apple, and he's working on Project Titan, Apple's car project, and so he's answering to Bob Mansfeld, who we just recently learned is heading up the car project. So we have this guy on the team now. And we also have the news that Apple is expanding its focus in the car space. So not only making their own car, but also working on developing an autonomous driving system that could be used in other cars. And I'm curious, what do you guys think about this?
I would like to see Apple make its own car. It'd be very weird to me that Apple would get into the licensing business for autonomous vehicles when that is not what Apple does. It's not a whole widget. So yeah. I personally want to see Apple continue with its whole widget model and offer us the whole widget Apple car. I can't imagine the challenges that they are encountering as they work on developing this, but it's not This piece, by the way, came from Mark Gurman. It's his first piece to write with Bloomberg.
Right.
Mark, of course, cut his teeth, literally, because he's a young man, on at 9 to 5 Mac, breaking story after story after story about Apple's plans, new product announcements and things like that. Anyway, but... under Mr. Mansfield's direction, Apple, they're still continuing to work on the Apple car. Mm-hmm. It's just they're also working on this autonomous vehicle system that theoretically could be used by other people too.
I kind of see that as problematic because you have to go hat in hand to some other company and say, hey, we've built this system for our cars. You should buy this system for your car. Give up what you're doing. Give up control. Trust us. Trust our software. Assume liability, of course, but trust our software. Pay us for something you think you can probably do better at. It seems weird.
Why would you say that about doing better?
Oh, because probably every company has its own agenda, its own engineering talent, its own way of doing things, and they probably think, well, this is what we want to do, and these are our ways of approaching the problem, and we don't trust somebody else to solve it for us. We're going to trust our own engineers, and we probably think we can do a better job at satisfying our own needs than buying off-the-shelf software from somebody else that maybe doesn't completely meet our engineering and marketing needs. And that's what I meant by better.
All right. Keep in mind that this is exactly what Google's doing, and everyone seems to think that Google will do just fine licensing its system.
Oh, that's a good point.
Yeah, I think they're wrong.
All right. Well, is there any possibility that what Apple is doing is working on two phases of their car project simultaneously? Meaning the first phase where they get out their electric car, and then phase two will be the autonomous driving electric car. So they're just working on both parts at the same time.
Well, there's two answers here. The first is that we thought Apple was going to come out with an electric car that was conventionally driven. But over the last year, I think the people have sort of felt like Apple's too far behind the curve and can't afford to not jump on the autonomous bandwagon. The second thing is on that licensing issue, I wanted to mention what it sounds like to me is that Apple has a potential buyer. You know, it could be that Mercedes says, no, we don't need your help. We're going to go our own way, or some other company does. But this licensing thing sounds to me like Apple already has a buyer. Maybe there's a company that says, well, we don't have the talent and the resources, and why don't you do it for us? So put it in your car and then we'll ride along with you. So I think that's where the licensing things come from. I wouldn't view it as saying Apple's going to shop this thing around to every car company on the planet and say, you should use our system. I think they have some selected interested parties. And I think that's where it's coming from.
Based on what? Where is that coming from?
Based on the idea that it would be irrational for Apple to build this system and then try to sell it on the market to all these other companies that are probably already working on their own systems.
Wow, man, boy, it's like, so conjecture, projection, and mixed conjecture, and has.
That's what I do. That's what I do.
I know.
That's why anyway, people love anyway, my conjectures.
Based on the theoretically evidence, I'm a huge fan of Mark Gurman. I think he is a very talented young reporter.
Mm-hmm.
He's actually he's hands down the best reporter in the, you know, the Apple world. You know, picking up the mantle laid down by Nick DePlume after Apple agreed to buy Mr. DePlume out of
the market,
out of Sync Secret. But anyway, his theoretically evidence-based reporting, as opposed to projecting conjectures onto Apple.
No, I just use sheer logic.
Do you? Okay, so
before the show, you know, in the pre-show, we were giving ourselves pause about the idea that Apple would try to shop this system around to every car company, because what would happen is that they'd meet with mixed success, and it would be a drain in resources, and they should just focus on doing the very best for their own car that they can without having to go hat in hand to some other companies and say, oh, please buy our system, it's so wonderful, which usually doesn't result in winning success. So
it also doesn't fit with Apple's modus operandi.
Well, that's my biggest problem with it. Nonetheless, what Mr. Gurman reported is, and I'm going to quote, he is part of a team, this is talking about Mr. Dodge, Dan Dodge. He's part of a team headed by Bob Mansfield, who, since taking over leadership of the Cars Initiative, has heralded a shift in strategy, according to a person familiar with the plan. That's what Mr. Gurman said. The initiative is now prioritizing the development of an autonomous driving system, though it's not abandoning efforts to design its own vehicle. So that leaves open options open should the company eventually decide to partner with or acquire an established car maker rather than build a car itself. And Apple, so. We may have actually sort of jumped the shark, even thinking that Apple would ever license this stuff out. Mr. Gurman's reporting is that, you know, Apple's designing its own car, but Apple could still buy a car company. That's his angle.
So really, keeping all this in-house. So in that sense, it kind of goes back to what I was speculating, that Apple is working on two parts of the car project simultaneously instead of in succession.
Well, yeah, maybe the Tesla 3 gave them pause, because, you know, I was talking to my wife the other day about, you know, future plans for buying an electric car, and I mentioned that there's 425,000 people ahead of me in line for a Tesla Model 3, and by the time Apple ships a car, maybe in 2021, Tesla will have sold many millions, perhaps, of cars and be way up the learning curve. So maybe this has given Apple some pause.
Uh, Brian?
I'm apple plucker. I mean, the entire auto industry is ahead of Apple from that standpoint. That's never stopped the company.
The only way out here is to integrate the hardware and the software, which is Apple's an expert at, and to build a integrated system, a car that is so beautiful in its design, so attractive in its amenities and comforts and control and safety, and has all sorts of exotic Apple created software coolness, like perhaps VR or whatever, mirrors and sensors and awareness and integration with the internet, that just because of Apple's R&D resources blows away every other car company, which is thinking about probably, and I'm being maybe overreaching, but to characterize that, you know, we got these cars, we're experts at building cars, now we're going to make it autonomous, which isn't a whole system approach. Just a thought.
All right. So where we sit with this still.
I left Brian speechless. This is a first.
Yeah. Well, go ahead and circle the date on the calendar and keep you a copy of this episode just for yourself for posterity. And where we really are after all this discussion is kind of back where we started from, which is, yep, Apple has this new guy. They're working on some more stuff with Apple Car. And they are putting some serious effort into autonomous driving.
Yes. I would imagine that this is definitely still the autonomous driving for an Apple car, whether or not it's built by Apple's new team or whether or not they buy an automaker.
Just hope they don't buy Yugo.
Is that even an option?
I don't know.
I'm not sure that Yugo still exists.
I don't know. But it was the first car company that came to mind that would be a really bad choice. I guess even more so if they don't exist anymore. All right. Hey, I said we have another topic I want to talk about. And the other topic is, well, it's you, John, in a manner of speaking. So you wrote a piece yesterday where you talked about how much you're enjoying your MacBook, which has USB-C. And that's great. But the thing that I'm really curious about, because you now have about a year of USB-C time under mm-hmm. your belt. Mm-hmm. What is your thought on USB-C now?
In terms of the peripherals available, the maturity of accessories,
sure,
and disk drives, yeah,
and then also just your personal experience. How is this working for you?
Well, let's start with the personal experience. When I first saw the MacBook and I first saw the USB-C, I was not as put off as other people were for some reason. I read all these articles about how, you know, the sky is falling and you need at least one USB-A port. And when I first bought it, when I first thought about buying it, I paused and I thought, well, let's read up on USB-C and see what's going on. And I kind of fell in love with the design and I knew this was the future. And I was ready to replace an older MacBook Air anyway. So I said, well, why not just jump in and be the experimental stunt dummy and, you know, absorb the technology and go with it and grow with it and go with it and see what happens. So it wasn't so much an operational aspect because I have other Macs where I do my production work. This was an extra machine that I could afford to play with and explore the technology. And I sensed that because Apple was going in this direction, that it was a good direction to kind of ride along on. So I didn't move into it with the trepidation of somebody who says, you know, I've got this MacBook Pro in my lap, I do production on it, I can't afford to experiment. So I had a different approach to it. That said, it didn't take long for accessories to start coming out that made life a lot better with it. I ordered it with a USB-A to USB-C dongle, a little cable. And, you know, I took that to the summer camp last year and I inserted a flash drive and I had all the files I needed to do my writing. And then in time, I started experimenting with little USB-C hubs that provided the USB-A expansion ports. I have one with four ports. It wasn't long before I had a Otherworld Computing powered dock with SD card and USB-C and HDMI and Ethernet and pass-through power. And multiple powered USB-A ports. Well, one's powered and the other are normal. So right away, I started figuring out how to use this machine. I wrote some articles about how I love the keyboard. I wish I could buy a standalone keyboard. I wrote an article about how your mentality changes a little bit when you start using it. You start thinking more in terms of AirPlay and Wi-Fi, Time Machine backup to a server. You don't feel so wired anymore, and you learn how to get along with it. You don't worry so much about MagSafe because the battery life is so good. So when you're sitting in when I'm sitting in my recliner with it, I don't have to think about, you know, stringing a cord from a power plug over to my MacBook, because I give me 7 hours of battery life, and that's longer than I'm going to sit in a recliner. There is a Griffin MagSafe adapter for it that simulates the MagSafe connector if you're in an environment where you could trip over a cord. But when I sit down at my desk, there's a space on my desk for the MacBook. I plug it into the dock's power supply. So I have pass-through power. I have USB-A. I have Ethernet if I need it. I've got an SD card slot if I need it. And plenty of USB-A ports. And so right away, I learned how to think wirelessly. But I also found ways to accommodate traditional ways of working. And I found USB-C to be a joy. It hasn't been a problem with only one port so far. One of my initial concerns was that it might break with all the testing I was doing and plugging things in and pulling things out and so on. But the USB-C connector seems to be well engineered in that respect. And the MacBook is well constructed. And so I've never had a problem with even close to a problem of thinking that it might break or get stressed or get a loose connection or something. So I would prefer to see two, one on each side. That would be nice, and I'm sure that's going to come in the MacBook Pros, maybe more than two. But in terms of using it with its Retina display, in terms of using it with a Core M processor, it's been plenty fast enough. I haven't had any criticisms about the MacBook in terms of everyday usage. It's designed to be portable. It's designed to be lightweight. You're not going to get supercomputer power out of this little Core M processor, but it's fast enough. It's the metric is when you sit down and use it and you do things and you launch a browser and you read your email and you manage some files, does it feel sluggish? It does not. It's fast enough for your everyday operations in terms of the user interface.
You're shifting from USB-C to the MacBook itself.
Yeah.
Okay, so Brian, I'm going to kind of pull you in on this. So you've been listening to what John's been saying about USB-C. Mm-hmm. Have you been having any concerns about what impact USB-C is going to have on you whenever you get your next computer that has it? And do you feel like John has made you feel better about USB-C, more confident?
I watched John's USB-C efforts here from the beginning, and he very quickly just, you know, embraced it so readily that I haven't had any concern about USB-C from the get-go. Plus, you know, there's always the reality that, you know, every time Apple makes changes like this, people cry doom and gloom, and yet it seems like we do it anyway. I haven't been worried about this from the get-go, but that was certainly buttressed by the fact that John didn't care.
All right, and I've been watching John's experience with USB-C very closely as well, and my big concern has been that when I get my next MacBook Pro, it very likely will have USB-C on it, and hopefully Thunderbolt 3, and will I have any serious issues, and I'm guessing not. And I'm also guessing that I'll just be in the same position I was when Apple phased out SCSI in favor of Thunderbolt, and I'll have a period of time where I have to deal with having a few extra dongles to adapt my current connectors to my new computer, and over time that will fade away as well.
My experience is that you're perhaps given pause by shortness of vision, and the first reaction one has to it is not to imagine or think about possible solutions, and so you're kind of stopped up short thinking, well, this isn't going to work. But once you have the machine and you start finding solutions and you start using solutions, then you're meant, and using the machine in the way it was intended, like my Wi-Fi backup on Time Machine, then your perspective changes and you say, oh yeah, as time has moved along, I've moved with the technology, I have found the solutions that work for me, and everything's cool.
I think we're going to see some serious wailing and gnashing of teeth when we get MacBook Pros that don't have the current set of ports. And I think we're going to see that because there's a lot of people, just like we see every time we get a transition like this, that have invested a lot of money in peripherals. And now they're, instead of looking at what the future has in store for them, they're trying to figure out how to just keep their workflow functional because the connectors they need are simply gone. And I think that's going to be a big fear for a lot of people. And yes, we'll sort it out, but we're going to hear people complaining for a while about how they're having to do workarounds to continue to keep their workflow functioning. And I'm not trying to bag on USB-C. This is just the nature of a big transition.
You can look at it as a workaround, or you can look at it as moving forward with the technology and finding cool solutions.
That's a much more positive spin.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm thinking we're going to be seeing more USB-C on Apple computers soon. So we'll have to revisit this after I have a computer with USB-C on it and see if my experience mirrors yours, John.
Cool. Can't wait.
All right. Hey, we're out of time, so we need to wrap up. Brian, thank you so much for being here.
Yep.
And John, thank you for being here as well.
Yep, yep.
And listeners, thank you for joining us. We'll see everyone again on Monday.